You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
Bertrand Russell was recognized worldwide as an outstanding creative intelligence, a towering intellectual figure in the 20th century. He also was a social critic and brave political activist. In 1940, a storm of protest arose when Russell was offered a professorship at City College of New York. The lobby that opposed Russell teaching at a New York university vilified him as immoral and indecent because he advocated women's equality of rights and critiqued the institution of marriage. Academic freedom at the City College of New York was trampled, and his appointment was canceled. In the last few years, academic freedom at York University in Ontario has been put in jeopardy. Dr. John Thompson has just published a detailed investigative report on what happened there. His book is titled No Debate: The Israel Lobby and Free Speech at Canadian Universities. John Thompson is an emeritus professor of mathematics and statistics at the University of New Brunswick. We've reached him by phone in the Maritimes. Good morning, John, and welcome to Vancouver Cooperative Radio.
Good morning, Manuel, and thanks for contacting me.
Now, the dimensions of academic freedom for faculty have varied over time and have not been uniform between Canada, Britain, and the United States. You did your investigation of the events of York on behalf of the Professional Union of University Professors in Canada. How do these professors define academic freedom?
Well, the actual definition is moderately complicated, Manuel, so I won't go through the entire details, but let me say briefly that academic freedom in the Canadian definition encompasses freedom of research, that is, which topics a professor will do his academic research on, freedom of designing courses and composing course material. It also includes the freedom to be an engaged citizen in a democracy. In other words, that a professor should not be penalized or, for example, dismissed for engaging in public debates on topics of general interest, even if they're outside the particular scope of that person's specific research areas. And Russell, Bertrand Russell, whom you mentioned, was outspoken. He actually was dismissed twice, once from Cambridge University during World War I for criticizing the government's war policy. And then he was dismissed again from the City College in New York for advocating, as you mentioned, among other things, that women should have full equality in social affairs, not just the equality of voting.
For those of us who aren't faculty at a university, why is it so important to have academic freedom?
Well, I'll give you some examples, some current ones. One type of example is, of course, faculty university at a university have very specialized knowledge and know more about certain topics than many other people. They also have access to information, library systems, and nowadays free access to a wide range of electronic access that their institutions pay for. So they have a privileged position and therefore a responsibility to, as Noam Chomsky said many years ago, not only tell the truth but to expose lies. And one of the ways in which they can use this privileged position of theirs is to alert the public to matters of general concern where governments or private agencies such as corporations don't wish the public to know the full truth. Let me give you three examples. Each one of these professors has a first name of David, so that just happens. I wanted to pick a wide range of fields. One is David Schindler, who is a biologist at the University of Alberta in Edmonton, who is a world authority on ecology and the effects on the environment of industrial pollutions. He's drawn public attention both in academic journals and in public media, such as radio programs like yours, to the adverse effects of pollution from the tar sands in Alberta on the Athabasca River system and the adverse health effects this can have on the native and other populations along the entire river system. Another prominent academic is the British psychiatrist David Healy, who drew attention beginning about 15 years ago to the fact that the commonly prescribed and very lucrative to manufacturers antidepressants called SSRIs actually have suicide generation risks or risk of suicidality, which can be double the risk of taking nothing at all. This was not known to the public and was suppressed for a long time, and Healy was the first to draw public attention. It's now more widely known, and the drug regulatory agencies in the United States and England have changed their regulations to take this adverse effect into account. Another area is law, and I'll mention Professor David Schneiderman at the University of Toronto, who's an expert in the law of civil liberties, and recently, in years back, he's drawn attention to the fact that governments, including here in Canada, have often wished to restrict civil liberties to either further their own political agendas or further the interests of commercial agencies that are their supporters.
Now, turning to York University specifically, what happened there that put academic freedom in jeopardy?
Well, there was a conference that was jointly sponsored by law faculty members at York University, the Osgoode Hall Law School, and another faculty member at the Queen's University Law School. The subject matter of the conference was a comparison of possible statehood models for the combined area of Israel and Palestine, where, among other things, they would compare the so-called one-state model, in which specifically they were looking at the case where all citizens, regardless of their religious or ethnic affiliation, would have the same civil and legal rights as compared to the so-called two-state model that President Obama and others have been promoting for the last couple of decades or so. The controversy was mainly over the one-state model where everyone would have equal rights and the prospect that everyone in Israel-Palestine would have equal civil rights appeared to be the main source of the controversy. So what happened was a great many individuals and a number of national organizations, such as the Canadian Council for Israel and Jewish Advocacy in B'nai B'rith, and the Jewish Defense League, just to name three, all made protests to the administrations of both universities, demanding either changes in the program of the conference or specifically that certain speakers who had been already invited be disinvited or that the conference be canceled altogether. This escalated into, for example, full-page ads denouncing York University in the National Post newspaper. But ultimately, the university administration stood firm in protecting the academic freedom of the professors involved and their right to choose the speakers and design the program for the conference. So when the university stood firm, those, or at least some of those concerned about the subject matter lobbied the federal government to intervene, and the federal government, in a precedent that had never happened before, interfered with the Social Sciences and Humanities Research Council, which had, through its very careful peer review process, rated this conference program very highly and given it nearly the maximum grant because of what they saw as a high quality program. The government then announced that it had asked the granting agency, SHRC, to re-review the conference, to put it to a second committee, which there was no precedent for. Our organization, the Canadian Association of University Teachers, learned about this from the organizers, and they, CAUT, made this a public issue. The government backed off to some extent, but SHRC still, possibly under feeling and pressure from the government, demanded an extraordinary and, again, unprecedented accounting of the conference program from the organizers. Nevertheless, both the government and SHRC, in effect, backed off, and the grant remained in place. The conference was actually held as planned and organized, and so ultimately it's a good news story, which demonstrates to me, at least, that academic freedom is better protected in Canada than it currently is in the United States or Great Britain or France, because similar sorts of events actually were canceled by pressure on the universities from outside agencies.
We've just got a couple minutes left, but I wanted to kind of ask what the larger trends are in Canadian society and maybe Western society that you see as driving these trends to restrict academic freedom?
Well, one is neoliberalism, which is a type of political economy that has been adopted by almost all countries in the developed world and even some in the undeveloped world. And that is to give, part of that philosophy is to, that results in giving special interest groups influence over government policy, and critics of government policy of this type, despite its disastrous effects on the world economy currently, are not welcome. So there's been a general attempt to restrict debate on anything that flows from that, including the alliances between the United States and Israel and certain other countries in the Middle East, such as Egypt and Saudi Arabia.
Well, I want to thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Well, thank you, Manuel.
Our guest has been Dr. John Thompson. He is Emeritus Professor of Mathematics and Statistics at the University of New Brunswick. John Thompson's book is titled No Debate, The Israel Lobby and Free Speech at Canadian Universities.